What if the government defaulted on its debt just for a few days?
That once fringe idea is becoming more mainstream.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
Yeah, good morning to you. I'm Bob Moon in for Steve Chiatakis. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It's Wednesday, June 8th.
Coming up, we'll talk with an economist about an argument that's gaining traction among Republicans. Let the government default on its debt for a few days to force bigger spending cuts.
Also, we'll check in with the E3 gaming conference that's going on in L.A. Did you know the average age of video gamers is 37.
Seems a little high to me. Also, we'll be playing this clip from Mrs. Doubtfire.
Hello. I'm calling in regards to the ad I read in the paper.
You're going to have to stay with us to find out why.
It's all ahead right here on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
Well, the Treasury Department says Congress has until August 2nd to raise the federal debt ceiling, or the U.S. will have to stop paying its creditors. There have been dire warnings about what would happen if the federal government defaults on its debt, but now it seems more and more Republicans are saying publicly that a short-lived default wouldn't be so bad. Marketplace's Amy Scott reports.
Republicans say failing to raise the U.S.'s $14.3 trillion borrowing limit wouldn't be catastrophic. Some, like former Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty, who's running for president, say we can put paying creditors ahead of domestic spending. Other Republicans, including Paul Ryan, head of the House Budget Committee, say a short-term default wouldn't lead to calamity.
If a bondholder misses a payment for a day or two or three or four, what more is more important that you're putting the government in a materially better position to be able to pay their bonds later on.
Jack Albertine of forecasting firm Albertine Enterprises says the idea does seem to be catching on.
I think it's more out of frustration and out of almost desperation to find an end game that this kind of idea will be gaining traction.
That's not to say Republicans are dismissing a compromise entirely. House leadership is taking part in bipartisan debt ceiling talks with Vice President Joe Biden. Tomorrow, the two sides meet again. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Let's get some analysis now from Richard DeKayser. He's an economist with the Parthenon Group, and he's with us from Boston, as he is every Wednesday. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what do you think, Richard? Would a short-lived default be so bad for the U.S. economy?
It's very hard to say how foreign investors in particular are going to respond to a short-term default, but I think it's possible that it would not be as apocalyptic as people had feared. But I think that misses the larger point. It's not what happens on August 3rd. It's what happens for the decades to follow. If the U.S. defaults on its debt, it could suffer a permanent, and when I say permanent, I mean 10 years or more, impairment of its creditworthiness, and the long-term consequences there would unambiguously be bad.
Why would it suffer for 10 years or more because of just a few days of a default?
Well, one of the reasons that investors flock to U.S. Securities is because they believe them to be free of these kinds of risks. Payment is made always on time and without question. If that fundamental premise is challenged, you could see investors confronting greater risk. They would charge for that risk. We'd have to pay them more in interest rates. And even if it was small, just say a tenth of a percentage point, over decades that would amount to hundreds of billions of dollars. And the irony is it would impair our budget situation rather than improve it.
Richard DeKayser, economist with the Parthenon Group, thanks as always.
My pleasure.
Every time you swipe your debit card to make a purchase, the store has to pay a small fee to the banks. The new financial reform law put a cap on that fee, but there's been a lot of pushback from the banks. And today, the Senate will vote on an amendment from Democrat John Tester to postpone the implementation of that cap. Marketplace's David Gura reports from Washington on what this battle means for you and me.
Trade groups for banks and retailers say this is all about consumers.
Now I read that using my debit card, which is so convenient, could become restricted and cost more.
Senator Tester says he's for the consumer, but Tester lets the big banks swipe our money.
But retail analyst Carl Howe says this isn't about us.
The funny thing about this whole argument is consumers will see no change, whichever way it goes.
He says banks will continue to do just fine whether or not the government caps swipe fees. And sure, retailers stand to save some money if the government caps them. Billions, in fact. But banking analyst Ron Shevlin says nothing indicates they'd pass those savings on to us.
If Ferrari could pay 3% less for glass for its cars, do you really think that the price of a Ferrari would go down by 3%? Of course not.
Banks and retailers want us to think they're worried about our wallets, when what they're really worried about is their own. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
President Obama heads to Northern Virginia Community College in Alexandria today to highlight the value of a highly trained workforce. But Bob, he's got some convincing to do. Mm-hmm. A recent study shows 57% of Americans don't think a college degree is good value. Mm. For more on this, let's bring in LA Times consumer columnist David Lazarus. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, David, as students graduate from college, as they are doing now, if they are able to find a job, which it's hard to do right now, how long do you think they're going to have to work to pay off their college debt?
It's longer and longer, it looks like. According to the figures that are out there, the average amount of debt that a college student is carrying is $23,000. Wow. That's an awful lot of money. And that's a big reason that the Pew Research Center has found in their latest study that a majority of Americans say college is just unaffordable and not worth the price.
Not worth the price. That's something we're hearing over and over again now. Is it worth the cost in this economy?
It's an interesting question, especially when you're facing that much debt and such tough prospects for finding a job, not to mention the cost of tuition. The average cost for a four-year public university, about $20,000 a year in tuition. That doesn't even include room and board.
Yeah.
$35,000 a year for a private university. So yeah, that's a lot of money. But I don't know. I look at that Pew number, and I think people are just sort of responding more to these tough times than they are to the actual value of an education. Because let's face it, people with a college education do fare better in the marketplace when they can get a job. They tend to get more money. They tend to have better advancement prospects. So you would think that this education does provide the foundation most people need to advance in the world.
LA Times consumer columnist David Lazarus, thanks so much.
Thank you.
NBC will keep its grip on the broadcast rights to the Olympics. The network beat Fox and Disney by bidding about $4.5 billion for the rights to the Olympics through the year 2020.
The cartel of oil-producing nations known as OPEC has announced this morning it will keep production levels steady for now. Member nations are meeting in Vienna and say they'll meet again in a few months to consider pumping more oil.
We've got more business news and the numbers available anytime at marketplace.org.
Now to the marketplace global perspective. Germany's leader, Angela Merkel, is heading home to Berlin today after her meeting at the White House, and she's returning with a clear, direct message from President Obama. He said the Germans need to take the lead in handling Europe's debt crisis. But that message and the messenger is not going down too well back in Germany. From the European desk in London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
President Obama is clearly worried that the debt crisis could spiral out of control, sending shockwaves across to the U.S. economy. At a joint news conference with the German leader in Washington, Obama said Germany must take the lead in tackling the crisis. Stefan Schneider is chief international economist at Deutsche Bank in Frankfurt. He says Obama's remarks might imply Germany has dithered over the crisis, and that's unfair.
There is no easy solution. Sorry, it's a very complicated issue and there is no quick fix.
He says there are 17 different European countries involved and the independent European Central Bank, so taking a lead isn't easy. And he says it's a bit rich for the US to be offering advice on debt management.
Overall, I mean, if you just look at numbers, the US is at least in as deep doo-doo as Europe.
Schneider says the U.S. is obviously worried that if the eurozone crisis escalates, investors could start looking more closely at the U.S. debt situation. From London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
It's crystal ball gazing time at the World Bank again. They're forecasting what may happen in the global economy over the next couple of years. Yeah, somebody's got to do it. Marketplace's Scott Tong joins us from Washington. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Bob.
I see the headline forecast, global economic growth 3.2% this year, then up to 3.6% the next couple of years. What's the thinking behind these global thinkers?
Well, the thinking is the main engine is the developing countries. The view from the World Bank is the emerging countries are past the financial crisis. They've rolled the rock up to the top, and now it's back kind of to business as usual in a lot of these countries. That stands in big contrast to the rich countries, growing at 2 to 2.5% compared to maybe 6% in the emerging countries, because we, the rich countries, have the biggest hangover from the financial crisis. Here's economist Andrew Burns of the World Bank.
High-income countries, having been at the nexus of the financial crisis, having been most involved in the excesses, if you wish, of the boom period, have the largest amount of restructuring to do.
And Bob, here's the euphemism alert. The rich country problems, according to the bank, include fiscal sustainability questions. In other words, deficits.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll take that. What's the biggest risk they see going forward? Middle East, other financial forces?
For now, the Middle East crisis, they say, has been contained as far as impacting the world economy, but they're really watching oil prices. If there's any kind of supply shock and oil goes up, say, $50 a barrel, then for us, you know, our gas might go up to $4.75, $5, and the same effect would be felt around the world. So far, a relatively containable impact, small effect on the world.
I didn't hear any mention of record food prices. We've heard a lot about that. Are they worried about that?
They think about it a lot. The big question is the relationship between food and energy. You need fertilizer, which is petroleum. You need to transport food, which is also petroleum. And that adds to the input costs. And the World Bank is worried that we could see this prolonged inflation push, as they called it, higher prices, unless farmers can be more productive going forward.
Marketplace's Scott Tong giving us a glimpse of the future. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Well, now, Bob, to a piece of technology being unveiled at a park in Hastings, Minnesota. It's called Sonic Screen, and its purpose is to get teenagers to stop hanging out at the park and vandalizing the playground.
And how's it going to do that?
Well, it's going to do that by emitting a high-frequency noise that apparently can only be heard by people under 20.
Go away, mosquito.
That's
huh?
Who knew that they had this technology? In fact, we're playing the sound right now.
We are?
You'll just have to wonder for the rest of your life.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
Nintendo has unveiled its latest gaming system, the Wii U. It won't be available for another year or so, but even so, analysts aren't sure it'll be enough to win back gamers from rivals Sony and Microsoft. The unveiling happened at the Electronic Entertainment Expo, also known as E3, here in LA. Our tech reporter Steve Henn has been hanging out there, and he joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, first set the scene for us, Steve. What's it like at E3?
It's kind of a madhouse. Fake zombies are climbing the walls. There were real tanks parked in the driveway. I can't play the serious games to save my life, so I've just been creeping up behind gamers like Andrea Leong to watch. Leong's a graphic artist who works in the industry.
So I noticed you were just eaten by a lion.
Yes, I was eaten by a lion. But overall, this game is really, it's actually really fun, and the graphics are really amazing.
What's it called?
Dragon's Dogma.
So, as someone who works in the industry, is working on a game like this the ultimate?
I would say so. It's one of the, you know, the dreams of anyone who goes into the game industry business is to work on a huge project that's almost epic, like a movie.
Well, how does the size of the video game industry compare to Hollywood?
Well, in 2010, video games for consoles like the Xbox or Nintendo sold more than $10 billion of games. So that's actually almost exactly the same amount of money as Hollywood. But if you add in apps for smartphones and social games for Facebook, that's probably another $5 billion in sales. So by some measures, this is bigger than the movie business.
And when I think of people playing video games, I do think of people that are younger that can figure out these crazy 3D games. Is that right, or is everyone playing them?
A lot of people who grew up playing video games are not so young. The average age of a gamer, according to the industry, is 37. And a lot of the games aren't just about lopping people's heads off. I met a game designer at USC last night that's building a game for Xbox Kinect called Mother Nature, and it lets you control the environment with your gestures.
Wow. Marketplace's Steve Henn here in Los Angeles. Thanks so much.
Sure thing.
And now let's do some numbers. 192, 203, 201, 237. Know what those are, Jeremy?
I don't.
That happens to be what's known as our IP address.
Ah.
You type marketplace.org, the web magically converts it. Well, soon there may be a whole new world of web numbers. Big and small internet players are taking part today in the largest one-day test of what you could call a new internet. Marketplace's Jennifer Collins addresses this.
We've got so many devices that use the internet, smartphones, laptops, tablets, that we're running out of ways to connect. A next-generation system has tons more space, but isn't widely used. It's called Internet Protocol Version 6. The test today sounds even catchier, IPv6 Day.
Not just IPv6 Day, World IPv6 Day.
Martin Levy is with internet service provider Hurricane Electric. Today, Google, Yahoo, Facebook, and hundreds of others are testing the V6 system. Most users shouldn't notice a problem.
Unless there is a configuration issue. That's the failure mode that we are looking for.
If that happens, you won't be able to get to the websites of test participants. And that's on purpose. Michael Van Norman is director of network engineering at UCLA.
The reason that the providers have all decided to do this on the same day is so that none of them are disadvantaged by looking like they're broken while their competitors look like everything's fine.
Van Norman says it's important to work out the kinks. UCLA, for one, will be rolling out the system in its dorms this summer. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
And finally this morning, Jeremy, imagine you're looking for, let's say, a nanny or a pet sitter, and you hear this on the other end of the line.
Hello? I'm calling in regards to the ad I read in the paper.
Okay, so as anyone who's seen Mrs. Doubtfire knows, it can be hard finding good help. Well, a Los Angeles entrepreneur kept hearing that complaint from friends and clients, so he started a special domestic staffing service, and now the Rent-A-Grandma agency aims to franchise nationwide. Bills itself is the place to find carefully screened mature women for nannies, elder care, housekeeping, and similar jobs. One of the selling points on the Rent-A-Grandma website is women in their 50s don't text or tweet while they're watching your kids.
But we, of course, Bob, here at Marketplace Radio, do text and tweet, sometimes even during the show. We're at Marketplace Radio on Twitter. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Bob Moon. And for Steve Chiotakis, this is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.